Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Today's Monday. It's May 13, and we're already in the middle of the month. It just keeps flying away as we are so busy with so many things. And while everything seems to be quiet on the Eastern Front, it really isn't. There's a lot going on. And yet there seems to be a calm, a sense of calm. But it, you know how it is in Westchester County. It's always before the storm. Anyway, this is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Harris. I'm your host this morning. And if you'd like to join us in conversation, you're welcome to do so. We're at 347-205-9201. Again, area code is 347-205-9201. Well, we have a lot on the table today. We're going to focus on the deadlocked labor arbitration negotiations concept that comes up for renewal every 5 years. And evidently, that's going to be on the block as far as the governor's concerned. And this has great impact on unions, union contracts with municipalities all over the state. So we'll talk about that. Then we're also going to be talking about the quiet that's being imposed on the theft of services of employees who work for the Neprahan Community Center. And this is a constant repeat type scenario, a modus operandi, if you will, of Reverend Dr. Jim Bostic, who heads the operation there. That whole place, the Neprahan Community Center, is nothing but a cesspool of cover-up. And it continues. And unfortunately, it's what some people will think. The bottom line is that this is a cover-up with a lot of big political names involved in the cover-up and in keeping it quiet and keeping it away and mitigating it, mitigating over 60 people that are employed and are not getting paid. Some are, some aren't, some never will. Some have already quit. Some can't afford to wait for funding, and because there's no promise of ever getting money, even though they should be a contract all the way through to the end of the year. I think the end of the year for the Neprahan Community Center ends probably around the end of May or the end of June. I'm not quite sure. But either way, there is no money, and the Reverend is telling everybody, no, we're not going to pay, so don't even fret about it. And yet, it's allowed to continue. And, of course, the last thing, and probably one of the most important issues, which people don't want to even think about, is what's been going over there at Greenberg, you know, here with regard to the West Help situation and stuff like that. So we're going to find out a lot more than we want to know. And so often people want to be in denial of the truth because they're not familiar with the truth. They're not afforded the information, so they can't make that decision. And too much of our decision-making, of all people, including myself, may end up being influenced by nothing more than just how we feel. Do we feel good about a certain individual? Do we feel good about a certain subject matter? Is it part of our agenda? Is it not part of our agenda? And so on and so forth. So there's a lot riding on knowing, and unfortunately, too many people are not knowing, and that becomes a big problem. Well, I see we've got our first guest, actually, the person who wrote that story, so hold on a moment. Good morning, Nancy. Perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Good morning, Hezzy. Good morning, everybody else.
Good morning. We were just talking about you, but in a sense, in an ancillary way, because you were the one that put together this article about Greenberg's lack of due diligence, which led to a public outing, the F word. But more importantly than that, because that's just an incendiary sort of thing, it's the fact that people are being duped in Greenberg, of all places. Who would have thunk, of all people, Supervisor Paul Finer? I thought he was
on the
right side of the road.
Nobody was more chagrined and saddened than me, who I am. I am a resident of Greenberg. I've always touted how great Greenberg was. It is my hometown. I was away for it for a year. I was miserable away from Greenberg, only to come back and witness this you know, outburst last week. And he came home with like a heavy heart and said, "Oh no, not here too."
Yeah, isn't that really what's so frightening? It was interesting that today, in anticipation of the show, somebody at 1:24 in the morning wrote a comment to the effect of, "Oh yeah, let's hear all the lies you're going to tell us about today." How did he or she put this? Says, "Yeah, let's see what you expose in this latest rendition of corruption. More bullshit I can't afford to waste time on, but hey, thanks."
You know, I laugh. I knew that there would be incendiary comments. The last article from 2 weeks ago also brought forth a few incendiary comments. I actually have an inkling who's writing those at 1:24 in the morning. But as I'm sure you do as
really
well.
Good. That's why you're the investigative reporter.
No, I mean, you could even be a casual observer.
Yes.
And put together, you know, an outcome of this.
You know what's interesting? You know, we look at this crisis that occurred in Greenberg, and it's all over a development site where a new developer comes into town, so to speak, gives a whole song and dance, a pony routine, what they call it, a dog and pony show.
Yeah, dog and pony show.
Says this and that. Everything's hunky-dory. The wife is beautiful. The kids are smart. Everybody's doing wonderful stuff. And the town buys hook, line, and sinker, and they don't do their due diligence.
You know, there are two separate issues of development going on here in Greenberg. The one that I witnessed and that everybody who has Channel 76 here witnessed is over the picking of a development corporation to oversee the rehabbing of the 108 units of the West Help property on the county property of Westchester Community College. For the last 20 months since it was closed, it's been vacant. Several of my colleagues in the media, we've been invited to look over the apartments. It's really unbelievable what was allowed to happen. Doors left open, mold, fixtures falling off, just in disrepair. We were told that in the pipeline, this would have been a super-duper place to put Ferncliff Manor, a Full Sail school, which in and of itself does marvelous things for kids who have no place else to go. I wasn't really sure that was a great place to stuff that school, but, you know, at the end of the day, you were sort of like, oh, okay, maybe it's all right. I had actually, even back in March, I had mentioned to you that I had attended a dinner meeting of the Special Moms of Westchester where Supervisor Finer was in attendance, and pretty much there was going to be a promise of respite rooms, and you know, that night, while it was a wonderful idea, I was thinking, gee, according to the lease with the county, this must go back to affordable housing. And a school, certainly, while it's a wonderful place, is not affordable housing. Fast forward a few weeks later, the county does get involved and says, listen, you have to return that to what it was intended to be, and that is a site for affordable housing. And that is when suddenly everything hit the fan. We had multiple developers with multiple proposals. I had written about it last month. You know, again, nobody is faulting the supervisor, nor the town board, nor even the county, but do your due diligence on whom is offering you a proposal. Do some background checking. Do a little bit of work. And that's all that it would have taken to prevent what has exploded in this town. And with a council person who lost his patience with a resident and the taxpayer, and, you know, we'll be forever caught on YouTube in perpetuity for people to watch.
Yeah. Wow. Unbelievable.
It really was unbelievable. Not surprising. There have, you know, been obviously other municipalities over the years where council people, town board members, city council members, county board of legislators that have lost their tempers and acted in a wide variety of behaviors. But, you know, to certainly drop the F-bomb because you don't like the speaker or you don't like a gadfly who actually says, hey, while this person, while you may not like them, you may not like the blog they keep, you know, this isn't the time for you to be playing around with your smartphones, your laptops, your iPads. You know, you don't have to like somebody's opinion, but you certainly have to respect them enough to make eye contact and at least pretend to listen to them.
Well, that's what's so interesting, because in a sense, isn't that what it's all about, that discourse between the public and governance? And it seems that there's a government, whether it be the council people or the supervisor, there's a short fuse. I don't even know how we got to this point. It's as if the people who get voted into government are the ones that are most concerned that their enemy is us.
It's interesting. I am a person who is genetically hardwired to have a short fuse. And I'm working very hard to, like, dampen that fuse. But at the end of the day, whether you have a short fuse or not, if you are an elected official, certainly you have to temper your personal feelings with what you are actually have been elected to do. And Councilman Jones, I think he just let his temper get the best of him.
Yeah. But at the end, we still boil down to the same thing, right? That isn't the issue, what his language was, but just the conduct of being short with the public. And you know what I find interesting is that rather than to contest the perspective of anybody, whether it be a blogger or whether it be a news reporter or whether it be public, that government doesn't seem to have an answer, and that they immediately, you know, get their dander up and they start screaming or using epithets, and they think that that's going to put a damper on everything. Everyone goes away in shock, but when you get home, you start to say, well, what have we accomplished? But nothing.
I don't know what we've accomplished other than the fact that, you know, certainly it was an outburst of poor deportment. One of the things that has always set Greenberg above the fray is that, yes, we did have a pretty open and transparent government up here. You do have free access in and out of town hall. You can pop in and talk to the supervisor. He does put out his home phone, his cell phone, his private emails. But, you know, when people question somebody, a board or a supervisor or a county executive or a president of the United States, what you really just want is an answer. It may not be the answer you're seeking, but you just want a reply. You don't want to be told in what direction to muck off.
Yeah, well, that's what I think is the big issue, and I think that we've removed ourselves from it. There is no real discussion anymore. People are just yelling at each other, and they don't pay attention. It's all like, okay, so that's what you said, and who cares, and we'll just move on, and we'll keep on going, making the same mistakes that we've made all along. But then the question becomes, everyone is so cynical nowadays, why didn't they do more due diligence over at Greenberg with regard to that company, MRH, that developed the property?
What I think happened is MRH, through creative financing, gave three quick rental options that would have garnered the town probably more money with less of an outpaying of the rehabbing of the units. And again, you and I have had this conversation a lot. People are their eyes glaze over when they see numbers, and they just can't comprehend them. So they saw a company that offered three rental options for the town. You know, like you said, in a dog and pony show, you're going to certainly, and this is human nature, grab the one that you think looks the best, but also the easiest and also the quickest. We are here in Westchester County. We do have an affordable housing crunch. We're being sued by HUD at a time when, you know, affordable housing is the buzzword and will be the buzzword for this upcoming election cycle. You know, I think it was the hot potato that the town just wanted to get rid of. You know,
Is that a good enough answer? I mean, your answer is correct, but is that a good enough answer for government? Isn't that why we have them?
It shouldn't be a good enough answer, but I do believe that, you know, we have putzed around with West Help for a long time. We do have this issue, and it was like this company came in riding a white horse and dressed in silver, and I think it's human nature. I do believe the town kind of got duped.
Mm-hmm. And is there a way to make corrections? Do you think that government will learn that there is a better way?
Doing
the due diligence?
Of course not.
Okay.
There will never be. Of course not. I say that so quickly. You know, government, you cover government, I cover government, Carlos covers government in Albany, and it's, no matter with what branch, it's a case of hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
And, you know, in this case, it was a hurry up and get it done sort of action. And, you know, I think it was just, in all honesty, I think it was just a monumental mistake.
Yeah.
And when you make a mistake, what's the best thing that you can say?
I'm sorry.
And a lot of us, that's a hard concept to wrap our heads around, to say, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. You know, we've made a mistake. I'm sorry. I said a bad word in public. I'm sorry. Unfortunately, instead, what you get rather than the I'm sorry is, you know, a 1:38 a.m. comment, you know, online.
It does seem that there should also be sort of ramification, don't you think? Or maybe you don't, I'm not sure, with regard to...
I don't think there should be ramification. I think if you can find it within your emotional strength to say, I'm sorry does, those two little words carry a lot of power.
I know. Well, that's the government side. But what about the developer who tried to dupe the city?
That's where
ramification should come in. Shouldn't there be a penalty for?
There should probably be a penalty. Again, I tried to look at both sides. This is still, and I wrote, these are still harsh economic times. The construction industry is now starting to gain a little speed again, but there are still many small developers that are struggling.
So are you saying,
am I giving him a hall pass? No. But yet I do certainly understand why he may have sold the town a false bill of goods.
Well, okay.
And it's a matter of self-preservation, I guess, or company preservation.
Well, if, you know, that may be the case, but then, I mean, how is the city and its government supposed to be able to withstand all of this? You know, I feel sorry for his state of plight, but can we afford to be duped? Because if he would have gotten the contract, he would have sat there with his contract and say, hey, you're up the river without a paddle. And
you know, had we gotten the contract or had this gone through, there's any, you know, you could write any sort of scenarios for it. It's a tiny little company. I think the biggest faux pas there was saying that they had a 10-year relationship with the Richmond Development Group when they've only been in operation for 2 years. I think it was an act of desperation to keep a small company afloat, not thinking. And truly, I believe this was a case of just not thinking on the developer's line.
Well, you know, based on what you're saying, you know, I can appreciate that. But remember, there was a case in New Rochelle where they were going to have a developer that went belly up.
Yes, Mr. Capelli.
Well, no,
I will use the C name.
Well, you know, Capelli certainly is in the front, but I didn't want to bring up his name again because, you know, he's in a sorry state of affairs. But there was another company that was going to have something to do with the Echo Bay project. And
correct.
Echo Bay with the Armory. And it turned out they were the chosen developer, and then they went belly up two months later.
And it's so sad because the armory is still in the news. Certainly nobody knows quite what to do with it. The veterans want it rehabbed, and again, we're just emerging out of our recessive state. Is there the money? Is there private fundraising to do it? They're so peeved at everybody. They raised their Gadsden flag last week in protest. When they should actually be peeved at the developer.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing that does make me kind of laugh about all of this that's going on throughout the county with development and rehabbing historical sites or affordable housing sites is that there's just no money. There's no money unless, you know, municipalities or county governments or local governments have a printing press in the basement of their buildings to print out some dollars, a lot of these projects are just dead in the water.
Mm. Well, that's really a shame that we don't. Well, you know, there are other people who are not dead in the water, that are financially sound, that have great resumes of relationships with banking and other financial institutions that can get the work done. And
yes.
There is no problem. And they have a resume that they can put out there and prove. But the question is why we go in the other direction, or we go too often in the other direction.
Again, I think most municipalities and most governments subscribe to the hot potato form of making a decision. Let's just get it done and get it out of our hands.
Okay. So
Let's just get it done and get it out of our hands. And we'll worry about any ramifications down the road. This time here, we had actually a couple of gadflies who had done the due diligence for the town.
Yeah.
And that's what makes me laugh in a kind of pathetic sort of way, is that they had done, you had actual residents and taxpayers who had done the due diligence for you.
Well,
and rather than saying, oh, my goodness, we made a grievous mistake, let's table this for now and go back to the table and review what these two gentlemen have dug up. Actually, it's three of them. And take a look with a fresh pair of eyes. But again, as much, and I'm going to say this right on the air, that what prevents this particular form of government from doing this is just stupid pride.
Mm. Well, you know, we still need to sugarcoat some of these things because a lot of people's egos are very, very shallow and very.
Oh my God, they're not shallow, they're fragile.
Well, so true. So, is there a?
And I'm sure that this radio spot is going to buy me a visit this afternoon.
Well, you're very lucky then. You're going to get a visit out of it.
I'm sure. You know, 2 weeks ago it got me a letter.
Okay.
In the mail about how could you say such sounding things?
Well,
today will get me a visit.
Well, I would like to think that, a lot of people who have a position opposite that of government, whether correct or not, are not getting the responses from government that is required to engage in that discourse. Because let's face it, government works for the public, not the other way around.
Well, that was how it was intended, and that's how our forefathers set it up. But, you know, we've kind of like morphed away from that.
Well, you know, I think we have too. But then how should the public then, or how should anyone that is contrary to a particular government position that's being taken, is there any recourse whatsoever? Can you really fight City Hall? Or is it like keep your mouth shut, sit down, and let us move on with the agenda?
Under our constitutional rights, it's not just newspapers and media that are protected by the First Amendment. It's private citizens as well.
Right.
You have a right to say what's on your mind. Hopefully you can convey it in a socially acceptable
mm-hmm.
form.
Mm-hmm.
But it is your constitutional right to actually have that healthy discourse with your local government and to be able, even if you are not a popular person with your local government, to be able to stand up and say what you have to say. It isn't always about throwing the blue Guardian boxes in the garbage.
Right.
Sometimes it's just about being able to stand up and say, listen, this isn't exactly correct. This isn't exactly right. This is what I've uncovered. Can we table this and look at this further?
Mm-hmm. Well,
if you are responsible government, no matter who is delivering the message, whether it's myself, Bob Bernstein,
mm-hmm.
Hal Samas, or even Tom Bach, we have a right to say, hey, this isn't quite right.
Well, if that's the case, then what world do you live in that we can find this sort of place? I'd like to move.
I don't think it exists anymore.
Well,
you know, every once in a while I think to myself I should sit down and reread Aldous Huxley's Brave New World and see if I fit in there.
Well, unfortunately, we're all moving there. I think some of us are already there. But that becomes the question, you know, because it's not the specific story, but what we can extrapolate from it. Like, what are we learning from this process? Is there a way of having discourse between the public and government? Is government willing to listen? Are we as people, are we willing to change government so with new faces if they don't get it together?
I think so. I absolutely do believe so.
But we take a lot of heat from government And in reality, I'm not talking about the media, but just the public, they have to go along for a very long time. You know, 4 years is a long time. 2 years is a long time.
2 years is a long time. 4 years is a long time. What I would like to say is to residents and taxpayers and just general humanity is take a look at what your elected officials are doing. Take a look at what your activists are doing. Mm-hmm. And make your own judgment. You know, not everybody is in the wrong, but not everybody is in the right either. You have to be the ones who figure that out on your own. Unfortunately, yeah. You know, these are difficult times. All of us are working long hours just to keep roofs over our heads, pay our property taxes, put food on the table for our families. It is difficult for people to actually get involved because, gosh darn it, at the end of the day, they're exhausted.
Well, I agree with you, and I wonder then who's falling down on this. Is it at the end of the day? Well, you did an exceptionally wonderful article which exposed the way things are.
Don't even think it was an expose. I think it just was like, this is how it went down. What do you think?
Well, you know, Nancy, you make it sound like this is like what everybody does, but most people don't do it that way, that a lot of the reporting is not the way it went down. It's always tainted by some sort of agenda, whether it be political or personal. And so the news isn't being reported. And then that, too, switches government off and switches people off. So the media...
It does switch people off.
Yeah. And government, they don't want to know things that they don't think is right, you know, or they think is being reported fairly. And fairly is just honest. Tell us what happened instead of, you know, the make-believe. But they don't like to be told that their make-believe is not going to fly either.
Well, that's why I laughed. You know, I did actually click on this morning to see the comment and giggled to myself, and I said, oh, here it comes.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, lots of people saw this. Lots of people here in Greenberg, I would say better than 90% have cable TV. Mm-hmm. And these meetings are on a continuous loop.
Yes.
And people will see it. I happen to be a fan of the supervisors.
Mm-hmm.
I happen to think he's done an extraordinary job with this town while he's been in office. But there comes a time when if you and your board members kind of mess up, it's time to say, oh, my goodness, we made a mistake.
Well, is it conceivable?
But we won't see that.
No, we won't. But is it conceivable that some people in government burn out after 20 years?
You know, that's a very interesting question. Paul Farner has been our supervisor a very long time.
Yeah.
And when the rest of the county was really suffering during the recession, We actually kind of kept our heads above water. We tread it. We moved money from column A to column B. We really could have raised the flag over Greenberg and would have been the model for everybody. This sort of behavior is what will sully somebody's 20-year reputation.
Well, you know what's interesting? When I look at Paul Farner, with all due respect, I see what you see. I see someone who is able to move along in the time that he served and still serves, and he did it very well. But he also did it in a sense with by his guidance. And somehow during that 20-year span, I see that more and more people became uncomfortable with government. So a lot of people got their voice in the process, and he was diminished by all these naysayers who didn't quite want it all so good for Greenberg. They had their own personal agenda. They wanted to destroy him because he wasn't of their party. They wanted to destroy him because they wanted a job. They wanted his job, or they want somebody else's job, or he was a stickler and he was in different developers' way. So the developers put up the money to try to throw him out of office. The Ratner people did that against him. So, you know, no matter how I guess he's entitled to maybe also lose his cool after a while, too?
Absolutely. And I think I said that a half hour ago. You know, human nature proves that we all lose our cool.
Right.
And, you know, we blurt things out of our mouth that once they're out there, you can't take them back.
I'm not so concerned about, like, you know.
I am, quite frankly, though.
You are?
And if you hear me out, you know, human nature, and obviously I'm a human, you're a human, Paul Finer's a human, Ken Jones is a human, as are these gentlemen who are his detractors. All of us are victims at one time or another of bad behavior. It's how you handle once the behavior is out there that legitimizes you. And this has been an interesting thing with all parties involved, not just Ken Jones or Paul Finer, but I'm also talking about Hal Samas, Tom Bach, Bob Bernstein. While these are really good community activists, you know, they also need to be held accountable for some of the stuff that they say as well. Our supervisor is not perfect. Our town board is not perfect. But they are not perfect either.
Right.
And there comes a time in municipal government or in county government that you have to put the personal nitpicking aside and get down to the real, roll up your sleeves and get the work done. And leave the nitpicking at the door. And I believe that both sides are guilty of that.
Well, most definitely, and I concur with you on that wholeheartedly. So is there a way for us to jumpstart the whole process again? Do we need to? I mean, where do we get re-engaged? Because we're not engaged right now.
We're not engaged right now. Articles that I may write that are certainly going to touch a nerve. I must give a shout out to David McKay Wilson from another publication. He occasionally will touch a raw nerve and all heck will break loose. But again, does the rank and file of residents and taxpayers, they read it, they digest it, but do they act on it? 9 times out of 10, they do not.
Mm. Boy, that was a downer.
That was a little bit of a Debbie Downer, but it's the reality of what goes on now, and I think this is the crux of why we have so many municipal, local, countywide, statewide, and federal governments who are failing the people. They know the people are just too doggone exhausted to do anything about it.
Well, you know, it really is very interesting because there was a great article as well. You know what, before we do a great article, let me just point out what's happening at the Western Broadway Theater. So let's take a quick break for what's happening May 20. We'll be right back. And we'll be back with Nancy King of the Westchester Guardian and myself. This is Westchester on the Level. Hold on a moment.
Hey, doo-wop lovers, mark this down on your calendar. On Tuesday night, May 21st, the Westchester Broadway Theater presents an incredible night of doo-wop music with one of the original groups that started it all back in the late 50s, the Doo-Wop Hall of Famers, the Belmonts. An amazing night where you can enjoy some of the greatest doo-wop music ever recorded by the group that put Belmont Avenue in the Bronx on the American music map. You'll relive all the Belmont's biggest hits like Run Around Sue, Tell Me Why, A Teenager in Love, In the Still of the Night, and so many more. The timeless classics that put these Bronx legends into the Doo-Wop Hall of Fame. And don't forget, before the show, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees, all for one low price, and the parking is free. Order your tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Be there to enjoy the smooth harmonies and unforgettable hits of the Doo-Wop Hall of Famers, the Belmonts, Tuesday, May 21st at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back. This is Westchester on the Level, and we're speaking with Nancy King of the Westchester Guardian. I was wondering, you know, because I think we've really discussed this very much. There was a great article, maybe you saw it on Sunday, in the Journal News about the June deadline that may bring about a resolution to the state's debate on a binding arbitration.
Yes, I did take a peek at that.
Yeah, so the governor evidently might be inclined to just let the whole bill expire because it gets renewed every 5 years or had been in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Is it all about money? And do we make mistakes about money? Are we not frugal when times are good and we get to be draconian when times are bad? I mean, is it appropriate to expect, let's say, union membership to buy into whatever contracts they had at one time and now unravel that, and yet government, on the other hand, is hiring people at bigger salaries? I don't know. Like, I don't know where to go with it.
It's an interesting story, and I actually went to a barbecue yesterday where a good topic of the afternoon had to do with arbitration and collective bargaining. Happy Mother's Day. Just what I wanted to discuss, collective bargaining on Mother's Day. and I thought to myself, oh, my God, it just never ends, even on a, like, faux holiday.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I have an article in the pipeline concerning unions. This is the time of year that unions are holding their elections. This is the time of year they are putting forth their slate of their new officers, and they also hold position, you know, for 4 years, like any other elected official.
Mm-hmm.
They, in my research, though, they are the Wild West of elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
What was once for the rights of the American worker has been lost in translation somewhere. And Andrew Cuomo realizes that unions are not so much anymore for the rank and file, but for the upper officers to pilfer off of union funds.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, when I see what he is trying to do, it kind of brings a perverse smile to my face that he's rattling his saber and saying, listen, I'm giving all you guys X amount of time to get your doo-doo together, or I'm going to start to dismantle all of you piece by piece.
Well, you know, that's where I'm wondering if it's appropriate. Didn't people sign on 30 years ago, 20 years ago, 40 years ago for, you know, a standard? And are they going to be able to cut it back?
And even longer. You know, you're talking about a 100-year history of unions in America. And at that time, it was to protect workers' rights. It was a 40-hour work week. It was cost of living. It was to provide some safety. It was to provide all of these rights that any worker should be afforded, any human should be afforded. But somewhere in the last 20 years, again, unions, which are a branch, a pseudo branch of big government, have kind of lost their way.
Right.
And while they need to come to the collective bargaining table and give up things, and I'm sure there are union officials listening to us right now, you need to come to the table. This is 2013, you need to put in some money for your health benefits. You need to give back.
That's where I need to ask you. Like, for example, I know certain unions in Yonkers, they put in money for their health plan.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have a Yonkers Parking Authority, which is like an entity unto itself. It's not controlled by the government. Yet the people who work there, they don't put any money into their health plan. And that's part of government, but it's separate government from the what people think of as government. It's a separate entity set up by the state. So here the state is permitting one of its own creations to skirt the issue. And people look at that and they say, hey, there's a problem here. Who's going to take the lead and show us the right way? And why can't they be one standard across the board?
It's going to be interesting. I have looked at the Yonkers Parking Authority, and it is an interesting entity. I'm not certainly sure why they have not been embraced by a different form, that one of the locals hasn't sucked them in.
It's politics.
It is politics. But I also look at the County of Westchester. They are the largest union, 9,200.
Mm-hmm.
They have been without a contract for, I would say, 2 years now.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure.
Okay.
They are fighting the county executive tooth and nail over his proposals as opposed to their proposals. I think you and I actually received a letter from their president last week.
Yeah.
Feeling that not only were their rights to collective bargaining being squashed a little bit, but the fact that they used to have voter registration tables at Playland, at the cultural festivals in Valhalla, and they have been told to cease and desist with those.
Mm-hmm.
Again, both of them, in my opinion as a journalist, are in the wrong.
Mm-hmm.
The county government really should understand that the people's right to vote is the reason you're sitting in office. And if it's the CSEA, even if you are at war with them, are providing a valuable service of registering people to vote.
Right.
But at the same time, I also look at the CSEA for the county, and she's not budging, and those county workers are not budging. But they're going to have to come to the table at some point, and it better be soon. And I'm not saying to wave the white flag of defeat, but this is 2013. We're not working in a sweatshop. If you have a legitimate job with legitimate benefits, those are protected by law, but again, you have to also contribute something to it. And that's also with the Yonkers Parking Authority. You need to get to the table.
Well, most definitely they do need to get to the table.
And I think this is what Andrew Cuomo was saying. Come to the table or else.
Well, I don't know what they're doing in Albany with regard to paying different government officials, or what the environment is up there, or the culture is up there. Certainly, I know Yonkers we're paying people who used to get $120,000, $140,000 a year, we're paying them $165,000 and $185,000. I mean, outrageous figures. You know, people in Manhattan don't earn that amount of money. And
exactly.
What are they doing here? And it's like a cesspool of who's going to take the lead. There are many people who make money not even going to work. There are many people who work at three jobs and do none of them, and they're raking it in. And the system is just so full of non-credible conduct that, you know, people say, well, why should I give up the contract? You're not taking the lead. You know, if times are so rough, how come we don't see a 10% across the board costing reduction? That would clean up our budget deficit in Yonkers in 2 seconds.
It certainly would. But again, this is a really murky subject, because the people who are questioning the 10% are the rank and file, and they are looking at what it has become known as the Friends and Family Network. And let's be honest, these are the people in any form of government who have been rewarded.
Right.
They've been rewarded for their campaign services, carrying petitions, being a loyal foot soldier. I will tell you an odd but funny vignette that I heard yesterday concerning the Friends and Family Network for the county.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that the Friends and Family Network for the county is expansive. And we've named names in the paper.
Yeah.
2 weeks ago, there was a CSEA eligibility examination given at White Plains High School, most of which was for the Department of Social Services in an examiner capacity.
Mm-hmm.
I heard from a member who was taking the exam for a promotion that every single patronage person in the county was there taking that examination.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have laughed over the years. We've known well-known people in Yonkers who have just been moved from office to office when they've not taken the exam. I had to laugh that this time around they're getting a little bit more slick. You may not pass the exam, but we're going to say, yes, you took it.
Uh-huh.
And I giggled to myself when I heard that there was a lack of parking at White Plains High School, which is a huge, huge campus, for the amount of people that had showed up to take, you know, the civil service exam for the
right.
county. And, you know, you have to giggle to yourself that here we are, we're stepping off into an election season where people like you, me, other political journalists are going to be writing about the Friends and Family Network and how you're just plopped into these patronage positions mm-hmm. without ever being expected to take the exam. I guess the county and whomever is running this campaign got smart enough to say, hey, all of you people, you need to go take the exam.
Well, because somebody's breathing down their neck.
Somebody. Well, and truthfully, it is, you know, a good chunk of it is the media.
Well, most definitely. It's so interesting. Again, the reason these forms of conduct have become acceptable is that it takes so long even for media or anybody else to put an end to it, and they change things. It's not part of the law, and no one has to pay for it. It's like forgotten.
Right.
Oh, well, I made a mistake. You know, oh, sorry me, bad me. You know, let me go on and do something different now.
Yeah,
it's such a big scam. It's unbelievable.
It was a scam, but I actually...
Oh, I hope we didn't lose you, Nancy.
I've not been kind to the patronage parade nor the Friends and Family Network. And in our lack of kindness to them, their response was to say, hey, all you 800 people, you have to at least go take the test.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we've all become a little bit too comfortable with one another, and so it's not such a good thing. But
you know, and I think probably at some point, whoever is listening to us right now on the ninth floor is absolutely cringing that this information now is out.
Well, you know, that's the big question. Do we become a little bit too cynical? Do we ask too many questions? Do people who, like you said, are busy with life? You know, I ended up going to a birthday party yesterday. I enjoyed that because it also pointed out to me that there is more to life just reporting.
Yes, there is.
And that it's so nice to be able to celebrate somebody's birthday. You had a recent birthday, so that was fun. And
that was fun.
And so that's what it's really all about, you know, wedding anniversaries, births, and the sorrowful time when we lose people who are part of our society as well. We lost a very good doctor yesterday. You know, that is what life is all about. So are people turned off by even the reporting nowadays?
You know, they have a love-hate relationship with us. They love us and they hate us simultaneously.
Okay.
You know, they want to hear the juice and then they want to say naughty things behind our backs that are intentionally leaked for us to hear. I think, again, you're back to talking about human nature.
Yeah.
They want the dirt, and then they want to they just want to tell us, oh, you shouldn't have done that. Naughty, naughty, naughty.
Okay.
You have to laugh at it. And one of the things I think in the media, and particularly, you know, obviously we work in non-mainstream media, you know, so we have a little bit more latitude than a lot of other individuals about what we say. But in, you said it, you know, whether it's celebrating a birthday or a Mother's Day barbecue, there comes a time that when you close your computer or put down your pen, you've got to say goodnight to it.
Yes.
You have to say goodnight, or it would absolutely drive you insane.
And it does.
And it does. And I'm starting to learn that, you know, at the end of the day, unless, you know, they're flying planes into Indian Point or the Kensico Dam has been breached, after 6 o'clock, it better be good or I'm not answering the phone.
Right. Absolutely.
And I think you have found it the same way. You know, there comes a time you have to have the switch off.
Yeah, you have to. Otherwise, you're going 24/7.
You're going 24/7 in a genre that is not the happiest place to be. I actually said to a friend of mine yesterday, I said, who is struggling? And I said, you know, I get into the mud pit almost every day. And I said, the mud pit is an ugly place to be. But at the end of the day, I have to get out of the mud pit. I have to shower. I have to change my clothes. And then I have to be somebody different. I said, or the mud pit will just eat you alive.
I see. Well, so it goes.
But, you know, what do I think Andy Cuomo's doing? He's putting unions on notice.
But does he have a right to do that?
Yes, I think he does at this point. At this point, yes, I do believe. I do believe that unions, and it pains me to say this, I grew up in a union family. I've been a member of a union. I have family members who are union officers. I hold a SAG card myself.
Yeah.
But unions have become the Wild West of poor behavior.
I find that difficult. I find it difficult to place that responsibility only on their back. And if If we put that responsibility on the back of unions as a, collectively with one brushstroke, shouldn't we be doing that with government? And isn't there a way for us to walk down a path of, let's say, frugal financial behavior together?
I agree with you there. But I do believe it's probably got to start with your unions listen to me. I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
Unions are a pseudo-political branch of government. And you have to start somewhere with reform. And
That's your premise. I believe the government needs to show the way. And I don't understand why they always have to be the ones to hold on to their money or even embellish it and yet expect...
And they're not holding on to their money. They're holding on to your money.
That's right. And the unions were allowed their contracts with government by the corruption of government, who wanted to use them as their muscle. And so, but the point is, okay, fine, history is what it was. But now, I know in Yonkers government, the mayor increased salaries 20%. A lot of places, even more in some cases. Why doesn't he drop it 40%? And let's see what that's going to do. Why does he need to make
You are never going to get a lead by example form government. You will never. Actually, believe it or not, Paul Finer does it. If he doesn't meet his goals at the end of a fiscal year, he does.
He does that as a promise to the public, but he doesn't demand that of other members in government. And that's the difference. So he'll do an analysis at the end of the year, go through 100 lists, and he may be returning $5,000 or $10,000 or only $1,000 of his salary. Nobody else?
I think we both agree the government does need to be reined in. I think we're just kind of disagreeing on which branch gets it started.
But I know that the unions are not a branch of government.
But they're a pseudo branch of government.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, they're used by government, and I really wonder if. Well, first of all, what I find difficult, whether it's your way or my way, what I find difficult is that we're in a country where law is the law, and now we want to break the law after the fact. Now, why don't we just level the playing field in a different way? If it's a question of money, then drop valuations. You know, they tell you, for example, that the reason you can't reduce the amount of payment to Wall Streeters is because they're the ones that buy the Rolls Royces and Lamborghinis and spend $100,000 for a diamond ring at Cartier or Van Cleef and Arpels. And bottom line is, if we maintain their salaries, the tax base will be reduced in New York. Okay, fine. So we keep it that way. Is that why we keep government at one level and everybody else has to pay the toll?
Well, I think, you know, again, you're talking about big city government as opposed to county government that gets hatcheted up into small municipal government. Should the premise be one and the same? Yes. Is it? No. Will it ever be? No again. Well, I'm just saying that there needs,
I agree with you that it won't be, but I don't want to be the one to suffer because government will not admit that they're in the wrong and that therefore they have to give a little bit too.
Yes, and I think that's what, you know, certainly, thank goodness we're able to have elections, and we certainly would hope that we would have leaders who could lead and could do that. But, you know, once again, you know, you're trying to change the course of people's DNA. And I wrote a month ago, and I still get comments on the street, that even in government, no matter what branch you're in, the minute the silverware hits the porcelain plate on somebody else's dime, you're done. There's no turning back.
Okay. Well, then I really wonder if the whole litigation process of looking at law. You know, it's funny. I don't really trust the law anymore. All I know is that we used to have laws on the books where if you were black, you were in the wrong. And that was acceptable for 50 years, 100 years, I don't know how many years. But the point is, we now find that that's inappropriate. We have corruption, and people used to get away with it. I mean, look at all the people in Albany that have done what they've done, taken money under the table, used the system, gamed the system so that they could make money. Hey, even Wiener, he got like $1 million in his pocket, and he's running probably just to get matching funds, and then he won't run anyway. You know, right. These are the games that they play, and that's supposed to be acceptable, but it's taxpayer money. So
it is taxpayer money.
Well, why do
I mean, you're talking about the law, again, in a really broad brush. I mean, you and I have certainly written a lot about the law in pertaining to police officers, to municipal officials, obviously whatever's going on in Albany. Everybody's wearing a wire.
Yeah.
You know, we're on the cusp of something, I can't say big, but we're on the cusp of something different. And as painful as it's going to be for a lot of people who put their unmitigated trust in law and their elected officials, are kind of being schooled in what's really going on in your government, whether it's somebody dropping the F-bomb, whether it's somebody wearing a wire in Albany, whether it's somebody in a union going off on these grandiose weekend events that are well over $1,200 per person. And these are the officers to take a yoga class, and eat a seafood dinner on your union's membership's money. And little by little by little, it's all being revealed.
Well, I wonder if that's good enough, because
it's got to be good enough, because you know why? If it's not revealed little by little, then it won't be revealed at all.
Well, that's true too. I wonder though if this is the American way in a sense, which is really quite something to, I guess, to be appreciative of, is that for those that want to know what's going on, they could conceivably know by reading or by listening or by watching. So there is a way of knowing. But this is a battle that's going to continue, and I would not like to see the unions lose because the government is so financially strong that they will be able to to diminish them by taking money right out of their wallets, when at the same time government will do nothing to make that same corrective move. Because you could say,
on the other hand, who's monitoring the unions, taking their dues paying members monies and going out to these dinners, which they say are executive board meetings, or going to these, you know, it's been twice in a month that I've heard of these three-day extravaganzas, whether it's up in Suffern. Who protects the worker?
You know, you're 100% right. And then I say the people who are not protecting the worker is the government. So where's the district attorney? Where's the attorney general? Where's the inspector general?
I laugh to myself. If you've ever belonged to a school board or a condo board, those are two, again, pseudo branches of a ruling governing party that are monitored by no one.
Correct.
Monitored by no one.
Because nobody wants to monitor it.
If you take if you draw a Venn diagram and you take it one step further, you realize that unions are not answering to anybody either.
Well, you know what? It's so funny because, in a sense, that was the other issue I wanted to discuss today, and that was the corruption at the Neperhan Community Center. And
oh,
there's
my God.
The same example of government not watching where they spend the money, which is taxpayer money. The Neperhan
mm-hmm.
Community Center makes over $1 million in grants and all kinds
mm-hmm.
of other stuff, donations. Computers are stolen or gone or never showed up. Refurbishment of the facility, never spent. There are people who work there who are crooks, who literally don't even show up for their paycheck. There are foundations to help the poor people in Haiti. We don't have an accounting of that. That's the DA's fault. That's the senator's fault. That's the assemblyman's fault. That's the city's fault. No matter how you look at it, that's what it's all about. And guess what? They all know about it, but they're all silent about it. How is it going to make that change?
They're all silent about it because, again, these are your donors during an election cycle. And therefore, you'll never get anybody. These are your donors. I laughed. I spoke with a colleague just this past week that this is turning out to be an oddly quiet election cycle.
You think so?
I do. We are now in the middle of May, and little by little every day somebody sort of declares, somebody relaunches their campaign. But it's quiet. It is quiet. And I actually said to a well-known political consultant, where is everybody? And
they're putting all their ducks in a row.
Ducks in a row. The big donors that we have all been keeping our eye out on, whether they're non-for-profits or pseudo-non-for-profits or bad boys hiding behind non-for-profits, they're remaining extraordinarily quiet this election cycle. And we both came to the realization that it's because the feds are in town. Nobody's talking. Nobody's donating.
Well, I'm glad you're not. Hold on a second, because I see we've got a call. Hold on a minute. Let's see. Good morning, caller. How are you?
Good morning, Hesse.
Oh, how are you? That's Barry McGoey. Nice to hear you.
Hi, Barry. Long time no chat.
Yes, how are you? I think the last time we saw each other, we were at Phil Reisman's radio show.
Oh, my God, I laugh. I was like, we always just run into each other on a radio show.
Yeah. I wanted to call in and take issue with some of the things you'd said about the unions, because unfortunately painting all unions with a wide brush, it's unfair to do that with all politicians or any other sector. And I just wanted to put our position here as far as the Yonkers Firefighter Unions and generally municipal unions as a whole.
Go ahead.
I think, there was a comment, who's looking over the union shoulders? It's our membership. And if the membership, isn't happy with the leadership, they have every right to replace the existing leadership, as well as we do have oversight regarding our funds by the Attorney General. There is a significant amount of oversight, and it comes from the most important group is that's our constituents. It's the ones who elect us. It's our membership. Karen Pecora represents her membership, she doesn't represent the taxpayers of the County of Westchester. She represents the CSEA members, and her job is to do the best she can for her members. That's not necessarily what's in the best interest of the county taxpayers.
Correct. I agree with you there. I do have a little bit of an issue when I hear through a grapevine, and certainly not with the Yonkers firefighters, because I watch your ads, and I couldn't do the job you guys do. But at the end of the day, when you hear that certain union locals have prevented other slates from running from up in Albany or in Kingston or wherever, it gives one pause and makes you think, who is exactly watching the till?
Well, I understand that, too, but the same could be said about the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, political parties
absolutely.
In general, as well as elected officials. I'm sure Governor Cuomo is going to be taking every step he possibly can to make sure he doesn't have opposition in a primary in the Democratic Party. And we see that
on
a local level, where the elected officials basically strong-arm. We just saw these, what's happened down in New York City recently, and some of the shenanigans that go on politically. So, we can't just call every union corrupt because there may be some officials, union officials, that engage in some of the same type of practices that politicians and other people in power do, that they practice.
My question to you is then, how do we stop that level of corruption? If a union does not answer to its constituents, which are your dues-paying members, how do you handle that?
Well, I take, like I said, my experience is with municipal unions. I'm quite familiar with most firefighter unions and
mm-hmm.
many PBA unions, as well as other AFSCME unions and SEIU unions. And I think because they're smaller locals, there's a tremendous amount of control by the membership. Maybe in some of the larger, I don't know if you're referring to larger organizations like the Transport Workers Union or the Automobile Workers Unions, or some of the big state unions like the state CSEA. That may be true to some extent, but my experience is with, whether it's the Yonkers Firefighters or the Yonkers PBA or the Neurochelle Firefighters or the White Plains Firefighters or PBA or the people that represent the librarians in Peekskill, those are all, good union people looking out for the interests of their memberships, because I can tell you, just as you said, Karen Pecor is fighting tooth and nail with the county executive, I can assure you the county executive is playing hardball with Karen Pecor. I mean, she was
absolutely.
Her job was actually eliminated. That's probably
mm-hmm.
not the most underhanded thing you could possibly do, is eliminate the position of the elected union leader. These are tough times for municipalities as well as for workers, and hopefully we'll all get through it. But I was just concerned about, disparaging comments regarding unions in general.
I wanted to ask you, Barry, what do you think about this whole concept of, would you take a lead if government took a lead? I think you've always said that you're willing to walk a tighter rope or tighter parameters if government would take a lead. But I don't see government taking a lead. I see them spending more money.
Absolutely. As you know, I live in the city of Yonkers. My taxes have gone up every year for the last 4 years. My salary hasn't gone up one penny. Since 2009, no municipal side employees has a raise. But yet we live in the city of Yonkers. We get taxed. So, our expenses are going up, but our wages aren't going up. And it's in our best interest, our long-term best interest for the city of, we're talking about the city of Yonkers, for the city of Yonkers to succeed financially. Because if the city of Yonkers can't get out onto this from under this economic quagmire we find ourselves in, there'll never be money for raises.
Correct.
Eventually, everybody, you kind of want and require some modest cost of living increases every year goes by to cover our expenditures. Our co-pays, when we go to the doctor, our co-pays have gone up.
Mm-hmm.
We go over to get prescription drugs, co-pays go up. Look at the price of milk and gas and everything else the last 4 years. We represent our membership, trying to get the best we can, and administration represents the taxpayers, trying to keep the cost down as low as possible. But that doesn't mean that both people aren't honestly trying to work for the best interests of their constituencies.
Yeah, I feel that somehow the environment is such that government seems to want to exact a pound of flesh, if not two, from the unions, thinking that that's going to resolve something, and the answer is I don't believe that it will.
I really think they're just trying to deflect the attention off of the failure of the state to adequately provide for municipalities and especially cities. cities that have a tremendous population base, which unfortunately are in economic poverty themselves, and require a tremendous amount of services. Albany has basically shut down the funding stream to places like Mount Vernon and New Rochelle and White Plains and Yonkers, and of course Rochester and Syracuse. So instead of us pointing our finger back to Albany and say, give us more aid, it seems like the focus has been, okay, let's start blaming the workers. Let's blame that librarian or the cop or the firefighter or the garbage man or the teacher. They're the reason why things are in such turmoil. It's not. It's state has artificially capped how much revenues can be brought in with the 2% tax cap, and then they haven't provided additional funding to make up the difference. And in the Yonkers, we're doubly whammied with an industrial development agency, which every single deal, every project that comes on board is coming with, you know, millions of dollars worth of tax abatements and then payments in lieu of taxes. So we're losing our tax base with these IDAs, and there's no additional funding from Albany. But yet they have every type of agency and commission. You know, there's commissioners of the Canal Authority. You couldn't dream up all of the state bureaucracies there are out there and the type of jobs and money that's flowing from the state. But it doesn't. They don't want to seem to fund the cities and municipalities.
You know what's interesting? Unfortunately, only recently, the guy who used to head the waterfront development in Yonkers, this guy named Jim Pinto, who was also in charge of that ferry service that was a total disaster.
Which probably wasted $10 million worth of taxpayers' money, putting a ferry service right next to a train station. Great.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
Well, and absolutely, this man, when he was questioned about something that occurred on the waterfront, he lied to the IG in Yonkers. He lied to the city. And guess what? He's employed by the Yonkers Public Library, which is another one of these separate entities that the city supposedly claims to have no input on, yet the board members are all appointed by the mayor. And this man is earning a six-figure salary working for the Will Library. This is where the waste is.
Well, he's a member of the Friends and Family Network, isn't he? Isn't he related to...
Oh, my goodness,
to,
we just touched on the Friends and Family Network.
Yep. I'm sorry, I didn't get to listen to the whole program. I just listened to bits and pieces. But it's important, you know, and then they turn around and blame the garbage man. Everything's the garbage man's fault, or the cop's fault, or the firefighter's fault. When, you know, there's so much waste in these governments, you know, and we're being bled dry. And the workers who actually do the work that keeps society going... You know, you can't have much of a society if you don't have someone picking up the garbage. We'll have disease and everything else. And, you know, our teachers, the most important things in our lives, we sent to a school for 8 hours a day. And we want to call these teachers crooks and, you know, they shouldn't have benefits and they shouldn't have pensions. So it's just, you know, it's unfortunate the vilification of working men and women that's going on when there's, you know, sometimes maybe some of that blame is justified. But I think most of the time there's plenty of other places to look for savings and waste and fraud other than the working men and women and the organizations that represent them.
I think what I was kind of offended at, Barry, and certainly, as I said, I've always had the utmost respect for anything Yonkers firefighters have done and White Plains PBA and the Firefighters Union. I think it was that I have received information concerning the local CSCAs, that they have these so-called training weekends, a women's empowerment weekend, where they all went to the Rytown Hilton and talked about leaning in as women. And then this past weekend, or 2 weekends ago, they were up in Suffern at the Crown Plaza. And, you know, I looked at the courses, and instead of binding arbitration and collective bargaining classes and grievance training, the program was wear your best Western wear for a hoedown and take a yoga class tomorrow to sweat it off. And I thought to myself, is this really what union officials throughout the state should be doing?
That probably wasn't the... I mean, most likely there were some collective bargaining classes. But, you know, no matter what you're doing or where you're doing it, it can't be all work and no fun. So often go to firefighter conferences. We have a convention each year, and you know, there's 2 days of convention where you're doing the business of the state association, but then there's also a golf tournament and there's a dinner cruise, because you have to mix work with play as much, you know, as you can, because otherwise no one would want to go. You know, so looking at, you know, maybe course offerings that a couple of them might have been.
Oh, my goodness. I guess I'm just old school Irish Catholic, all work, no play.
Well, you have to make it, you know, you have to give someone a. How does New York City attract conventions and car shows? It's because addition to the car show and Porsche's bringing in their latest and greatest, they also are going to get taken to sights while they're here. And that's what attracts people to New York City and to Las Vegas for trade shows and conventions. You know, Las Vegas is the trade show capital and convention capital of the world, because there's a lot to do there besides, you know, your trade show. So I think, you know, and, you know, the thing is, some of those things are important, you know, because you want somebody who's in a high-pressure job to maybe, think about taking a yoga class to relax, because, you know, you're constantly being attacked by management.
Right.
You know, so you want, or maybe it's a relaxation technique for some of these female labor leaders. I don't know.
I don't know, because the first time that I hear that you're at a yoga class, I want to be there and take a picture of that.
Oh, I love this. My wife has actually tried to. She thinks I should do yoga, so to stretch myself out and to relax myself. But the same thing. Imagine me in a pair of leotards on one of those mats.
I don't want to go there, Barry.
Yeah, I don't think I want to go there either. But you know, it's just that when you do log on to a union's webpage. And you do see what's gone on of these things, and I do understand and appreciate the validity that yes, you do have to have a decompression component and a fun component, or nobody would come to these conferences. I just don't know if posting the pictures of you in your cowboy gear is appropriate.
Yeah, well, maybe they need a public relations person to make sure keeping their image the right image they want to portray. You know. But
okay.
most union leaders I know and have dealt with, and it's at the local level. I don't deal with like the state and the international and the national ones. Very hardworking people that take their jobs very seriously for very little pay, a lot of aggravation. Because you can imagine how it is, let's say in the city of Yonkers, to be the leader of any union that hasn't had a raise in 4 years.
Yeah, I don't know.
Imagine what those
frankly.
Membership. The membership is continually, you know, when are we getting a contract? When are we getting a raise? And then you're dealing with administration that doesn't have any money. So you're getting it from both ends. You know, you have frustration from your membership, and you also have frustration from the city leaders who have their own problems. You know, like in Yonkers, I've told Hedges this in the past, you know, we talked about health insurance contributions. We've been contributing to health insurance significantly for 20 years. Before it was fashionable, before it was sexy, everybody's got to contribute for health insurance. Our new employees start to either 50% of the cost or 35% of the cost, depending upon if they have a family or not. And then eventually, after 7 years, goes down to 10% and 20%, respectively. But we've been doing that for 20 years, when many other unions in Yonkers, besides the PPA, didn't contribute anything. The elected officials didn't contribute anything. The appointed officials contributed nothing. You know, Yonkers firefighters and police have been contributing at those levels for many, many years. And now we have the new pension system where our members have to contribute more towards their pension.
Correct.
You know, funny because you brought that up. I actually was looking at the parking authority in Yonkers, and they don't charge the people that are employed there. The executive director, she doesn't pay. Neither does the guy who does the financial, the books. It's insane that they and you know what? No one on the board knew that until it was brought up to them. You know, it's so selective. It smacks. It smells of politics, and it's wrong.
And they do it under the guise of protection that it's a separate legal entity that the city has no power or control over it.
Which they have anyway. If they wanted to do something, they could. But they just don't want to.
Well, anyway, I didn't mean to barge into your show, but I just wanted
awesome.
Give a little perspective from our side. Thank you, and I always enjoy listening to you, Hezzy. So I'll let you continue on with your guest.
And Barry, I look forward to seeing you again. And it'll probably be on a radio show.
Sure. Or if you ever want to come down and do a story, I would
love to come down.
Absolutely. You're always welcome.
So buzz me up, and I'll be happy to come on down.
Very good. All right.
Thanks,
Nancy.
Appreciate it.
Bye.
Thank you very much. That was Barry McGowey. He's the president of Local 628 of the International Association of Firefighters here in Yonkers. And very well-respected leader and a brilliant guy. Not only is he a firefighter.
He's a brilliant guy.
He's a lawyer,
if I could count brilliant leaders on my hand, he would be, you know, you could use one hand to count the brilliant leaders that we come across, and Barry is one of them.
Absolutely. It's really good. Well, it's going to be very interesting at the end of the day to see how this whole thing travels. I would hope that there would be respect of the law and that there would be a concerted effort on all sides, removing the political interests of family and friends, and we could all move together. You know what? Everybody would pay the pipe, and there's a lot to pay.
Is a lot to pay, and that's exactly what, you know, I think Barry brought out in this conversation, that is that everybody has to start to pay. It's now time for everybody.
You know what? I think that, too, would bring out more people into politics. Maybe that's not what the parties want. I'm not quite sure. But it'd be very interesting. What a great... we need to discuss this more often, because I think those are the new battlegrounds.
The battlegrounds have definitely shifted here in the county. Obviously, we see them shifting in Albany as we speak.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be an interesting season. If it may not be the most exciting or sexy election cycle, but I certainly think it is going to be interesting.
It most definitely will.
Yeah, that's all that I can come up with. It's going to be interesting.
Most definitely. So does this stuff that's going on that may not be as sexy as it used to be in years past, are you still engaged in that whole process? I mean, are there things that you are looking forward to as you move
ahead?
Well,
right now I'm watching the county executive race really closely. It's going to be an interesting race. You have the battle of the two young, good-looking family guys. You have Noam Branson, a cerebral, Harvard-educated mayor, running against Rob Astorino, who really is just great with the public.
Well, you know, that's the thing that's interesting. Peggy Godfrey wrote an article over the weekend, which she usually doesn't do, because she unearthed some numbers, and I will post it right after we finish the show today. I've got to just review it, because she needs an editor like I need an editor, and then posting it. But basically her story is that, he's given the store away. And that's part of the development, and yet the development has stalled. The question becomes then, can someone who has not been so good or has a lackluster resume of accomplishment in a city, I think New Rochelle is the sixth largest city in the state, then why does he have the right to even consider running for office?
That's the democratic process. I mean, I could run either one of my dogs if, you know, they had enough money.
Your dog might win.
that is the beauty of the American electorate and the campaign process and the democratic process. Everybody has a right to run, even if you have a lackluster resume.
But that's the other thing, too, you know. I look at Rob Astorino, I'm not one of his fondest admirers, but I really wonder there's nothing there. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still reeling from the way he's been able to push and control that whole Playland fiasco, losing money, playing games, and he's part of a corruption scheme that continues on, and that all the families and friends that work continue to be part of that scheme, eventually turn that into a plot of redevelopment of, you know, one and two family storied houses. But,
right.
You know, it's highway robbery in broad daylight. And
well, again, you know, obviously I'm not a big fan of sustainable playland. I've written it. Again, similar to the Greenberg fiasco, I think, you know, it was a hot potato. Let's get rid of it. You know, who is behind sustainable playland? Perhaps a large benefactor, a large donor. These are certainly the things, and I think this would be with whomever is in office. I think it's going to be an interesting but compressed election cycle here in the county. By now, you and I would certainly be taking a look at not just the county executive race, but at the 17 legislative seats. People are very slow to announce whether they're running, rerunning, who's coming out of the gate, and where is the money. I did spend a portion of the rainy day this Saturday looking at people's financial filings.
Yeah.
And I was kind of shocked, though I guess maybe not so shocked, at the lack of money that's rolling in for candidates. These races are becoming more and more expensive. And, you know, is that precluding us from getting really great candidates? So that's what I'm kind of looking forward to. I want to see who's coming out of the gate. I want to see where their money is. It's really sad to say that here in Westchester County, he with the biggest treasurer is oftentimes the winner. You know, so there's going to be interesting things to watch, not just in the county executive or even the legislative seats, but we do have certainly in a lot of municipalities, council seats up for grab. Peter Tripodi is stepping down from Ossining's.
Yes.
And, you know,
he's
running against Kathy Borgia, who has really demonstrated a very hard work ethic for the county. But, you know, clearly a liberal Democrat.
Right.
He is a conservative.
Right.
You know, that's going to be an interesting race to watch.
Well, he's also got a tremendous amount of stamina, and, you know, he was one of those loners in a good way. You know, he felt that his position wasn't being expressed, and he that whole place up in Briarcliff was all Democrat, and he brought a different perspective to it. Very, very commendable young man, great drive, and constantly as a good resume of accomplishment for government in for such a short time. So I take my hat off to him. Very, very. I was impressed from the first day I met him.
Yes, I was as well. I wrote about him a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, simply he is an in-your-face politician.
Mm-hmm.
I will be curious to see how his campaign moves forward.
Right.
And, you know, I'll be reaching out to him again to ask him, what is your vision for your district?
Yeah.
You know, it can't just be that you dislike the Democratic Party or you dislike the current legislative representative, but what is your goal? What's your vision?
Mm-hmm.
You have Judy Meyer in Rye Town who has decided not to run again, and you have a Rye Town council person, Catherine Parker, who has stepped up and said, yes, I'd like to take over this seat.
Mm-hmm.
You have the legislative seat from District 5, Bill Ryan.
Yeah.
Obviously, he went nowhere in his bid for county executive. He has told some people he's not running again.
Really?
And it, you know, we've heard he's not running again. And then you have other people saying, well, this was a perfectly planned political move to take over as chair again. I can't see that. Or is this his swan song? Is he retiring? Where does that leave?
Interesting. That would actually be, well, it would be interesting because there was a lot of drama then and since December.
There's been an enormous amount of drama, and there's been an enormous amount of backroom dealings. Will run for the District 5? Is it going to be Ben Boykin of the White Plains Common Council?
Mm-hmm.
Certainly a good candidate, a strong candidate. And the other thing that I find curious is that the Republicans for the county have been somewhat quiet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they haven't convened yet, unlike the Democrats who have that open and raucous and party-like convention. The Republicans run their convention quite a bit differently. It's, you know, one person can carry everybody else's proxies for them.
Right.
What's going on there? And then, of course, we always have the Independence Party kind of rolling around out there if you want to get some juice in the county. You know, you do need their backing. And the vice chair, I know, has just finished doing their interviews as of last Thursday. So everybody's a little late out of the gate this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a lot going on.
Most definitely we do. We do. You know, the Yonkers City Democratic Committee, they're not going to meet till the 30th of May.
Which is interesting. A Memorial Day weekend, which is the beginning of the vacation season. Who's going to be there? Who's not going to be there?
Well, a lot of people are not going to be there because...
Exactly.
You know, that was part of the intention. Originally, can you imagine, they wanted to do it on the 16th of May, and that was the day of the budget process ending. So, you know, the Democratic Party in Yonkers is certainly playing its little game, and I don't know what they're going to expect to get out of it, but it's certainly not becoming.
And likewise with the Republicans, you know, we are now moving into the third week of May, and, you know, who are they putting up? They have Rob Astorino. We know that.
Right.
You have your incumbents, your seven Republicans on the board. Who else are you going to throw out there?
I don't know. That's going to be really very interesting to see what's going to happen.
And they're silent. Silent.
They all want to be silent, and I don't understand that. What is the point of this? You know, well, actually, I do understand it, and that's what really unnerves me. These parties are there to engage the public in the political process. And yet, at the same time, they engage in their own politicking, and they dismiss the public input of people who belong to their party from having any say other than the party and than the district and ward leaders who decide
Correct.
For them. So that the public is already kicked to the curb just at the convention.
I must laugh while, you know, the Democrats, and you and I certainly take a jab at them, But it is a little bit more open. You know, they will actually sit down and speak with you or stand up and speak with you, whereas nobody has any idea of what's going on with the Westchester County Republican Committee. Even further still, what's going on with the Westchester County Conservatives?
Oh, well, that's another thing that's really a mind blower, you know. Well, the mayor of Yonkers supposedly put all his backing to Liam McLaughlin, who was running for Yonkers City Council president.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to be a done deal with a lot of Democrats making believe they were running. But at the end of the day, everybody knew that Liam was going to be the winner. And all of a sudden, you know, Hugh Fox's hatred of Liam McLaughlin from some personal issue that took place years ago brought out a new candidate that people are not familiar with, this woman, Grace Barani, who's a Republican, she would need to get the Wilson Pakula from Hugh Fox, but Hugh Fox is working for none other than Rob Astorino, who is looking to get the Conservative Party designation, and you know, the whole thing is like a whole mess. So at the end, will Hugh Fox give up? And he's playing the whole scenario for some sort of payback? You know?
Yeah, it's hard to comprehend.
Deal? Well, I know. It seems like there's a deal going on here. And so it's going to be like a long pull. It's like dragging somebody's teeth out in order just to be able to get that coveted line. Very interesting.
And it is a coveted line along with the independence line, and, you know, we can't delude ourselves. Whomever is running, whether you are a Democrat or a Republican, you need the independence line.
Well, that's the king crowning
and
you.
And that is the line to have if you want to be crowned the winner.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's all Doc Cavallo. He's the one with the smarts. And
thank goodness somebody is smart.
Thank goodness is right, because he's got the savvy. He knows how to. He's like Machiavellian.
Yeah.
You know, he's the American version. He's really very. Even if I disagree with him, I just love
he's watching brilliant.
Him play.
He's brilliant.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, you and I can sit here and kind of wait and it's a talk about that it's been an unusually quiet start to the election cycle.
Right.
But what we're seeing is the jockeying for the minor lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the independence line is no longer in Westchester County in and of itself considered a minor line.
No, the independence
I think the Conservative Party has been diminished enormously.
Most definitely. Is the independence line would be number three now, wouldn't it?
I think so. I think they've moved to number three, you know, off the record, although the show is called On the Level.
Right.
If you want to win in Westchester, the number one line to have is the independence line.
Right. It really has become that.
And it's certainly, you know, the Independence Party, I know how they interview, and they are tough on their candidates.
I wanted to ask you, when you think about this complexity of the two main parties, Republican-Democrat or Democrat-Republican, however you want to put it, and then you have the Independence let's just say Independence Party line and the Conservative Party line, and then there's the Working Families Party as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three lesser known. But
right.
Bottom line is there a way for, well, the demographics point to the Democrats being in the lead.
Correct. This is a blue county.
Exactly. So it's a blue county. Is it possible to win by sheer charisma or some other aspect if one is not part of the party, which is the demographically Democratic leaders?
Oh, we did it 4 years ago, did we not?
That was a fluke. You know,
it was a fluke. And I tell you, I was one of the few people who worked on that campaign full time. That was my job. I mean, you know, I don't hide that I took 9 months of my life off and worked that campaign.
And you gave birth
and
to the administration.
It was a fluke, but you also had a widely charismatic candidate.
Right, and the old administration was they'd been there too long, so people were tired.
They'd been there too long, and you know I you know, other than the HUD mess that we're in now, you have to look. I mean, at what point Andy Snow did grow this county? You can't take that away from him.
No.
You know, I laugh. I still see Susan Tolchin wandering around White Plains. You know,
oh,
she
really?
Moved,
yeah, huh?
You know, she works in the courthouse for...
We'll get a job.
You know, yes, you know, it's just like column A to column B. But it was a fluke, but B, whether you like him or not, you cannot dispute the fact that Rob Astorino is a charismatic guy.
I guess so. You know, he's got a sense. You know, he wraps himself around the flag and choir boy, you know, demeanor. And
but he's also you're talking about somebody who has a history of being in the media, on ESPN, on a wide variety of radio shows, on a wide variety of television shows. He's got the charismatic personality that was that, which is what got Ronald Reagan elected.
Mm-hmm. Well, that should be cool.
And I think, you know, if I was Noam Branson's handler, I'd be sending him to some quick method acting classes. Simply because it's the charisma that could quite possibly get Rob elected again.
That'll be very interesting, because most definitely, I think, well, there are two aspects to Noam Branson, and I wonder if his, shallow presentation of himself is going to be sufficient to eclipse that of Mr. Astorino.
He can't. You can't.
I don't think he can.
No.
So I think Branson is a weak candidate. Maybe stronger than Ken Jenkins, but I just don't find him credible.
If you could have rolled Kenny Jenkins and Noam Branson together, you would have had the perfect candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny conveys well to the public. Kenny is not afraid to reach out and shake your hand. Kenny's not afraid to look you in the eye and talk with you. Kenny may not return your phone calls quickly, but he is available.
Yeah. Is.
And, you know, I don't know Noam Branson.
Uh-huh.
He's an unknown entity.
Yeah.
Certainly, you know, don't cover New Rochelle, although our offices are based out of New Rochelle.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line is, I don't know.
Okay.
I think... you know, if by some odd chance he squeaks by, it's going to be because it is a blue county. But he's going to face a tough fight with Rob Astorino's personality, and that's it's a marketing game. It's advertising.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting too. You know, already Astorino's started to play his game. A lot of the people that used to be Republicans. Who came and were employed in the county, that came from Yonkers, they've switched their registration to
independent
party in the hope that they can outmaneuver the doc, who is not
going to happen. Not going to happen.
But why are they playing these silly games? Well, I mean, it
first
would work.
Of all, they underestimate the top two people in the Independence Party. Doc is brilliant, as is Dialma Vasquez. They are brilliant. And
Doc knows that this is being played, so he's ready for them. I mean, they've been trying this for the last 6 months.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, we have to laugh at what is going on with the jockeying for position and for those lines. You and I both actually kind of giggled at Doc's gala simply because if you are running for office, it certainly behooves you to show up to the gala, invitation or not. Glad hand with as many people as you can and sell yourself.
Well,
you had the two.
The doc had over 250 people who showed up.
Correct.
And guess who showed up? Doug Colty. He only had 40 people at his little convention.
Correct.
Imagine.
And then at his party, yeah. Because, you know, something $300 a pop to have dinner with the chairman is a lot of money.
Not really,
but to the average...
For regular people, it is. For regular people, it is, but for the party people, they're earning a lot of money, all these people.
They're earning a lot of money. But one of the things, getting back to my original thought, was, you know, here comes the county executive, and obviously there is no love lost between he and Dr. Cavallo.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of giggle to myself that everything that Rob Astorino hated about Andy Spano... traveling with a bubble of security people in that little huddle of undercover police officers from the county.
Yeah.
Everything you hated about Andy Spano, you've become.
Well, that's true.
And you know, when you step back and look, you know, from across the room, and you see that, you think to yourself, well, you know, maybe Noam Branson does have a chance.
It'll be interesting to see. This is
it's going to be interesting. It's going to be a fascinating campaign season.
Well,
but fascinating.
Yeah. Well, it'll be. I think there'll be a lot to learn from it, because it will be interesting to see. I think we'll be able to learn in what direction this county is going, and maybe we'll learn in what directions the nation is going, because there may be a lot of issues that will challenge both of these candidates.
Both of these candidates are going to have to address HUD.
Mm-hmm.
I think first and foremost, it will be HUD.
Yeah.
And economic the affordable housing, economic development. Which, you know, if you're taking a look, if you're a student of economics and you're watching the stock market close multiple times over 15,000 points, you know, obviously at some level we are on the road to recovery. Is it going
into
the county?
You know,
we're going to have to watch very clearly the economic development that the new Tappan Zee Bridge project brings to the county. So there are a lot of things to take a look at as we make our way to November.
Well, I think it would be a mistake to point out that we're doing better because the market is doing better, because that hasn't translated to the regular folks, you know, who are looking for jobs or have a job and you're very insecure. So I'm still waiting for translation here, and it doesn't look so good. Wherever
it doesn't look great, but, you know, hope does spring eternal that certainly the construction industry, which I think has really been one of the hardest hit, will suddenly be able to get those jobs in both Rockland and in Westchester County to build that bridge.
Well, that'll certainly be something that will... You know, that will be great for a lot of people, not just construction. But when I look at construction, I just see a lot of wasted, no planning that's taken place in the industry, and that's one of its failures. Maybe this is the time we'll start to think about what we do rather than to do with expedience.
I'm hoping that the Tappan Zee Bridge project really does become the lead project for more economic development within the lower Hudson Valley.
Absolutely. Well, it looks like, Nancy, we've not wasted 2 hours of people's time, and it's been really wonderful having you on. I think we've covered a lot of ground, Nancy.
We did cover a lot of ground today. You know,
well, you
and what's
be
been
shocked.
An otherwise slow couple of news weeks, you know, there is stuff to discuss.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the news is just a barometer of what's out there. You just don't have the time to discuss it all.
Correct.
Well, listen,
and on
I
that note, I bid you and the listeners an adieu.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
And thank you, and I always enjoy coming on.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Nancy King from the Westchester Guardian. Appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you, and bye,
bye.
Everybody.
Bye. Well, that was Nancy King. That'll be great. We're coming to the last few seconds of the show. Tomorrow is Tuesday. I'm not sure if it's going to be Richard Nayrog or if it's going to be Belgium. It's going to be one or the other. So tune in. We'll find out. Even I will find out later on in the day. So thank you for joining us. Thank you, Barry McGowey, for coming on the show. As usual, it's wonderful if people can give us their perspective on issues. And I think we need to discuss this more. Be well, enjoy the day, and thanks for listening. Goodbye.